From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack.
Hi, Megan Mack.
Hi.
We're sort of fried. It's been a long week. It was another week heavy on elections. We had a range of discussions, both on what happened and on what comes next. And we've tried to provide a voice to every part of our community on all sides. Let's start with a familiar voice for many listeners. That's former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson.
He was a guest for our conversations about the city's nuisance abatement program, but he also wanted to talk about the election results. Johnson describes himself as an optimist in politics, and here's his take on the election of Donald Trump.
Well, I have to say, I'm the farther away I get from last Tuesday evening, the better I feel. I mean, I think we're going to have our moments where Donald Trump's going to surprise us in many ways, in a positive way, and he's going to shock us in many ways, in a negative way. He'll understand how he was elected and the fact that he was appealing to such wide and disparate points of view. So let me just make two quick observations. I'm a Southerner, and I travel back to my native state of Virginia every month to take care of my 96-year-old mother, okay? And up until a few months ago, my middle daughter and her family lived in North Carolina. And so I would do two for one. I'd go to North Carolina, I'd drive up to Lynchburg, Virginia, and I'm not on interstate highways, okay? And sometimes I take the back roads. I got friends who live in places like South Boston, Virginia, all right? It's way away from the interstate. So in these last 8 years, I can't tell you what I've seen as I go. I leave, if I fly to Washington, D.C., Reagan, and drive south on Route 29, I leave the most liberal bastion of Virginia, Northern Virginia, Fairfax County, Arlington County, and the like, drive into Central Virginia and start heading into the southeast. That's redneck country. And I say that as a descriptive, not as a denigration. All right. In 08, I saw these unbelievable signs. In fact, I used to see them, and I couldn't read them, and I finally had to stop. Because what they said, they didn't say vote Republican or anything. What they said was, whatever the day after the election, we will take our country back. Okay, that's all it said. We will take our country back, all right? And I saw these throughout the countryside. This year, going down south, driving in North Carolina and in Virginia, these huge Trump signs, Trump Pence, like billboards in people's yards. And you rarely see a Clinton sign. So I said, this is profound. Here's the thing that's so ironic about this. Donald Trump has never been an ideologue. Well, in fact, we don't know where he stands on a lot of issues. He's flipped, he's flopped. So he may surprise us in ways that we don't want to be surprised, that he will go out and be a decent president. You got to remember, Dwight David Eisenhower appointed Earl Warren, and that appointment from a Republican president unleashed the most progressive liberal part of our history. Richard Nixon created affirmative action and the Environmental Protection Agency, things that are reviled by the right wing of this country. All right. So and when Ronald Reagan, this is the most contemporary thing I can remember, when Ronald Reagan was elected, people thought all hell was going to break loose. And because he was an ideological person, I mean, you know, he tempered whatever ideology with good humor. He didn't go and throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I always tell people, one of my friends called me yesterday from Richmond, Virginia, and he said to me, this is the way the call started. Is the sun shining in Rochester this morning? I said, yeah, believe it or not, it is. He said, well, it's shining in Richmond. And you know what? It's going to continue to shine. That's what we got to understand. The darkness is not going to come as people predict it.
Now let's turn to the small business community. Donald Trump dominated with small business owners. And we welcome Tim Schieffen, the owner of an auto repair business in West Bloomfield. He has 4 employees and has been in business since 1998.
Schieffen explained that he voted for Donald Trump not to endorse some of the uglier things that Trump has said. Schieffen just wanted something radically different than the government he has come to know in this country.
I look at Donald Trump as a businessman first. I can put aside his brashness. I can put aside his arrogance. My hope, and I think many of the Trump supporters' hope, is that he sticks to business. He remembers how it feels to have to make concessions, how it feels have to juggle things, how it feels have to economize. I think he can walk around in my shoes so much more easily than the other politicians that we had to choose from could walk around in my shoes. And in my opinion, a lot of the choices we had up and coming through this election race across the spectrum of its beginning to now, there were the wrong people to choose from. Year after year after year, we have the wrong people to choose from. I didn't want to choose two freshman senators. I didn't want to choose from a lifelong politician. Donald Trump represented to me, and probably to most of the people that ended up voting for him, that change that I talked about when we first started talking, something different. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is a change, not a change in how we treat one another, not a change in how our temperament is spread across the United States, good, bad, or otherwise, but a change in how we act. I would compare it to body cameras for police officers. Do you think a policeman is going to act better with a body camera on or off? Well, how are our politicians going to act with a business person guiding the helm of the ship instead of a lifelong politician? Maybe Donald Trump will keep some of these naysayer Republicans on their toes. Maybe Donald Trump will keep some of these corrupt politicians honest. It's hard to say what's going to happen, but like I said earlier, I think myself and the others that voted for Donald Trump really were looking for a change.
So that's small business. Now how about big business? Matt Stoller is a Senate Budget Committee analyst, and he wrote a piece for the Atlantic Monthly that shook up the political establishment. Stoller's piece was titled, "How Democrats Killed Their Populist Soul." He writes that in the mid-1970s, Democrats were understandably focused on the war and government corruption, but they stopped caring about protecting communities from corporate superpowers and monopolies.
Stoller told us that the arguments in favor of big business are misguided. His solution? Bring back trust busting and let rural America and small communities get their competitive juices going again. This clip starts with Stoller addressing a caller who said that big companies like Walmart lead to higher employment and lower prices.
What they do is they spend their time paying their executives a lot of money. They spend their time focused on financial games, and they don't spend their time competing in markets because they don't have to, because there's no competition. I think anybody who, like, you know, who's flown an airplane or seen their cell phone service cut out or had to wait for somebody, you know, to repair their cable service, you know, oh, please be at home from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., we might show up, can tell you that they're just not more efficient, right? And why should they be? They don't have to compete. So, you know, I kind of reject this whole model that big business is just more efficient. That's always been the Bork frame. Bork made that argument in 1978. People have always sort of kind of constantly say, oh, well, there's more, you know, big business is more efficient. But as companies have become more and more concentrated, one of the most surprising things that we've seen since the late 70s is a dramatic fall off in productivity growth. And if you really want to look at efficiency, then you have to look at, are we actually deploying new technologies? Are we actually seeing more entrants into markets? Are we seeing fundamentally people produce more? And what you're seeing is, in fact, the opposite. As markets have become more concentrated, as big business is more powerful, what you're seeing is lower and lower and lower productivity. But, you know, the one of the things that Obama did in 2008 in Iowa, and one of the ways that he beat Clinton, was he promised to take on big ag. He promised to take on the meat packers and the seed and chemical makers and so on and so forth. And that convinced a lot of farmers who saw the Clintons and their long relationships with Tyson's and Walmart as a problem. And so the message does work when, say, you're talking to farmers. Our rural agenda, but by the way, Democrats got killed in rural areas this election. There really is a rural agenda waiting to be harvested, but it's not a rural agenda that says we need to deregulate, we need to get rid of, you know, chemical protections. It's a rural agenda that says, hey, your real nemesis are the grain traders, the seed makers and chemical makers that are raising prices on you, the meat packers that are destroying the open markets for pigs and chickens and so on and so forth, the institutions that are suing you for using, you know, for patents on their GMOs and so on and so forth. That's a very different model of elections than, you know, Democrats have used. It's kind of updating the Patman model from the 1930s. And I can't say that it would work or it wouldn't work. I can just say that it's just a different way of thinking about elections and policy.
Let's close the week with something entirely unrelated to politics, songwriting. Leonard Cohen passed away at the age of 82. The Canadian songwriter will live on through many of his works, including Hallelujah, one of the most covered songs ever written.
We wanted to talk about the value of songwriting and the different ways that artists approach their craft. And so we welcomed Connie Deming. She's awesome. She's a locally based songwriter. And in this clip, I start by asking her about her expectations as a songwriter for the audience, specifically if songwriters like Connie expect and want the audience to understand exactly what they're writing about. I'd like to just play a little bit of a song that came to mind for me, a band that not a whole lot of people probably know. They're from Texas. They're called Jacko Pierce, and mainly a duo. They've recorded a number of albums, but Jack O'Neill from the band said he was sitting on his couch in suburban Dallas one day, watching the evening news and watching late 80s, watching genocide in Sarajevo and watching the siege of Sarajevo. And he said, how in the world can we have a world where I'm sitting comfortably in a house and in another country in the exact same world, there's ethnic cleansing going on and there's fear and starvation and suffering and cannons going off and that fear of is tonight the night that it all ends? So how can that happen? And he wrote a song called Anderson's Luck that he wanted to just express that strangeness that there could be one family with such comfort and another with such fear. And I'll just play a little bit of that song. This is Anderson's Luck from Jacko Pierce.
10 o'clock news is on. In the mouth of the mountains, the city lies still under siege. My wife reads quiet at the firelight. Turn it off, step outside for wood from a fallen tree. Winter's on now, I got some coffee on. My kids sleep safely in the city.
So that's Jacko Pierce, and Jack O'Neill later said that he thought he did a poor job writing the song because too many people came up to me after show saying, I love Anderson's Luck. What is it about? And he had to explain it. And I wonder, Connie, can you write something that's beautiful, that's meaningful to you, but if the audience doesn't exactly receive it, does that take some of the power of the songwriting out of it?
You know, I don't think it takes the power away, but it feels disappointing to me to not connect with that place in them that I feel the song comes from. And yet, in order to do that, they have to deeply be listening. And how often does that happen? I mean, I don't think you've really heard a song until you've listened deeply to it at least 3 times. Then you might begin to hear, what are these lyrics saying? You know, you might just hear the music, or others of us like might just hear the words or need to read them right away while they're hearing it, you know. But I think it's a tough thing. And I just finished reading Bruce Springsteen's incredible, have you read it?
I haven't yet.
Oh my God.
No, I know, I haven't yet.
It's rich. He speaks of the, I love it. He never speaks of his performance in terms of just him. He knows what he's doing and he loves talking about that. And he always speaks of the audience as the other necessary yang to the yin. And it's a beautiful thing. I wish I had one of those quotes in front of me right now, but there's tons of them in that book. It's a wonderful thing. And you don't often hear entertainers or performers or, you know, singers talking about how important the audience is to the equation.
That's so interesting to me because before the Jazz Fest, 2 Jazz Fests ago, I talked to a longtime artist who said, you know, I'm painting now. I've written music for years. I'm painting now. And I don't really care if anybody gets it. I care that I get it.
There you go.
And kind of you're saying,
I'm still getting there. I just turned 68 and I'm still getting there.
But you're saying it really does matter, or at least it impacts you if they...
It does. There you are with a microphone and there they all are. And they've driven out there to supposedly see you. And they're going to ask for a song and you're going to say, well, no. My needs are more important than yours. You know, I don't know. I think it's a blend of your, what you want to do and what they really want to hear. If they really want to hear it.
That does it for this edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. Just a quick programming note. No podcast next weekend. Short week. Have a great Thanksgiving. We hope you enjoy it. You have no idea how much ended up on the cutting room floor of this. This is close to a record for us.
Yeah, we're at, 8 minutes right now, and we're going to use two of them? So you don't want the blooper reel.
This is, actually, people probably would, but that would probably be the end of us. But it will never see the light of radio. And that does it for this edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
And you can always find us on the WXXI mobile app. Have a great Thanksgiving.
She's Megan. I'm Evan. And we never make a mistake.
Ever.
Do have a great Thanksgiving. Bye.